Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. I'm Dr. Marty Gentius from Kent State University, and this week on Counselor Audio Source, Dr. Kim Desmond speaks with Dr. John McCarthy, both from Indiana University of Pennsylvania, regarding the Center for Counselor Training and Services. The center provides regional workshops to area mental health professionals.
My name is Dr. Kim Desmond, and I'm here with Dr. John McCarthy. We're both from Indiana University of Pennsylvania, and today we're going to be talking about the Center for Counselor Training and Services that was developed at the university to meet some of the professional development needs at the university and in the community. So, John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Kim. It's a pleasure to be here.
That's great. The Center for Counseling Training and Services at Indiana University of Pennsylvania is rather unique. Can you talk to me a little bit about how it came into being?
Sure. I've been here since 2001, Kim, in the department, and one of my interests has always been bringing an outside voice to departments. And what I mean by outside voices is that you and I may go to a conference, mm-hmm. and we may see a workshop that's really well done on a very good topic. Mm-hmm. Or we may go to another one-day conference someplace and say, gosh, that speaker was so good, and you walk away with so much information. And when I see things like that, I'm always saying, gosh, wouldn't it be great for our students to hear that, mm-hmm. to get the outside voices inside the department? And so at some universities where I have been previous to IUP, I've done that, and it seems to have turned out fairly well. And one of the themes here that I'll talk about throughout the course of our interview, it's just a win-win-win situation. Mm-hmm. And so shortly after I got here, we did a workshop in the Monroeville area, and Monroeville is a suburb of Pittsburgh, through the department, and we had 75 people come. I had no idea how many people were going to come to that, so 75 people. For me, that was very, very favorable, very sure. positive. And so from there, we continued to do workshops, and we got some very good numbers after that as well. And at one point, our department chair, Dr. Claire Dandino, said, why don't we develop a center out of this? And so lo and behold, it's been nearly 2 years now where we have had a formal Center for Counselor Training and Services. Two components out of that. One is the training, mm-hmm. which is bringing in workshops and developing workshops anywhere from 2 to 4 a year. And then the service component that we're really starting to develop now in terms of consultation, where our faculty will go out and do workshops at various school districts and agencies. It's a very exciting project. And as I mentioned, it's a win-win-win situation for a lot of different entities at the university and, as you mentioned, in the community, too.
Mm-hmm. Did you just have a hunch that this was something that was needed? Or?
That's a great question. I'm not sure if hunch is the right word.
Okay.
But it's one of those things where, as you and I know, Indiana University of Pennsylvania is in a rural area. Uh-huh. So part of it is there a training need in our community, in a rural community? And you and I get workshop flyers every day, mm-hmm. From various areas, and they may be more in urban areas, which makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. So can we bring some good training, some nationally known speakers to our university, where area professionals, graduate students, even undergraduate students, faculty can have it here as opposed to going someplace else? And so part of it was a hunch, but part of it was that it was proven successful at other universities, okay. on a more kind of informal basis than having a center-wide entity.
Okay. Could you talk to us a little bit about why you believe professional development is important and how the center helps facilitate that?
Right. And let me go back to that theme, Kim.
Sure.
It's a win-win-win situation as far as I see this. Professional development, obviously, is needed in many states of the union. Mm-hmm. And recently in Pennsylvania, licensed professional counselors are now required to get continuing ed credits.
Mm-hmm.
That's happened, as you know, in many other states. So first of all, there's a need for professional counselors out there for this. Secondly, as I mentioned, I'm a believer, a big believer in bringing outside voices into the university or into the department in various ways.
Mm-hmm.
And this can be an excellent way to do it. Bringing in, a nationally known speaker for just a day on a topic of importance has been something that students have also said, gosh, this can be a win situation for us. The other aspect, and if you look at our other audiences, are internship supervisors.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we've tried to do there is to give them some kind of benefit because they put in, as you know, endless hours in supervision.
Sure.
With our interns and practicum students. And so what we've done is we've discounted the registration price for them as a way to say thank you and offer some training for them as well.
Right.
So, and then the other entity, which can also be considered, is not only students in our department, but students in other departments. Example, school psychology. Example, could be sociology, certainly psychology, both undergraduate and graduate students.
Mm-hmm.
In those departments coming in as well. And we've also had students and faculty from other universities attend as well. So the win-win-win situation goes back to this helping a number of different audiences in various ways. And that's why it's so exciting for me.
What kind of training and services does the center specifically provide?
What we've done to this point, we initially started, Kim, with just having one-day workshops.
Mm-hmm.
And again, part of the challenge here, which I know we're going to talk about later, is what kind of topic is going to be successful, and certainly having a speaker, a presenter who is successful. So we focused on those one-day workshops, and the other part, which we can touch upon later too, is setting up a situation in terms of a budget. In other words, mm-hmm. if you're going to do continuing education, if you're going to do professional development, and you have somebody who's coming in from, say, 50 miles away who can drive versus coming in from 3,000 miles away,
sure.
obviously the budgetary restraints there are different. So we've done one-day workshops. And we've used speakers locally, we've used speakers nationally. And what we've tried to do to this point is have at least one workshop in the fall and one workshop in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in professional development, we can set up what we think is a tremendous one-day workshop, and for whatever reason, we're not going to get enough people. To break even, and that's all we're looking to do is to break even. And that can be a challenge, and that can be disappointing too. So we focused on the one-day workshops, and for some reason, the spring workshops, which we hold in late April, early May, have been more successful with registration.
Hmm.
And if somebody's listening to this and thinking about doing this, they may have ideas about that. I certainly have my ideas about that. But it's the one-day workshops that have really been the focus to this point. Now, recently, however, we've gotten into video conferences.
Okay.
And we have been a co-sponsor. We have been a site with an area psychiatric facility that has done a video conference series.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had sites throughout the state of Pennsylvania, particularly the western half of Pennsylvania. And we've served as a video conference site. We've done that for the last 2 years, and that's free.
Mm.
That's free for whoever wants to come, and they have some very, very good speakers. We've also done some professional development days, more for school counselors. And what we've done for the last 3 years is worked with our Division of Student Affairs to offer a one-day school counselor professional development day. usually in January, where area school counselors can come, get Act 48 credits, which is the state equivalent to the professional development credits that school counselors would need. And that's for free. Basically, again, sponsored by the Division of Student Affairs. So for us, it's a win-win situation because we're working with another part of the university. The school counselors come and get a one-day training for free with lunch and get professional development credits out of that too. Wow. So we've done one-day workshops, we've done video conferences, we've done professional development days. And the other area that we're getting into is the consultation. That's the service component of our center, where we could offer various topics of interest for school counselors or community counselors, and our faculty with service consultants go out and do a 3-hour, a 5-hour, a 6-hour, whatever is needed, workshop in an area of school district or an area of agency. And that's something that we're still developing. We've had some success with that, but it's still in the works as well.
What do you see as some of the benefits of having the center available? I know I can think of some benefits to students that are, kind of obvious, but it seems like there might be other benefits.
Yeah, you're right. I think there are benefits for students. Mm-hmm. I think there are benefits for area professionals in that not only the training is nearby, mm-hmm. but it's also, in comparison to some other workshops I've seen, the registration fees are not nearly as high.
Okay.
So it's maybe more inexpensive than maybe other workshops. I think it's certainly good for the university, too, to have a center, a formal center, for training and services for area mental health professionals. It also provides us, obviously, with visibility uh-huh. in terms of being an entity that provides training. I think it's also been a fine connection for alumni.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been one of the surprising things in terms of the developing the center for me personally.
Sure.
At that first workshop that we did in January 2002, we had 75 people. And I remember the person doing the welcome asked how many people in the audience were alumni. And there were a tremendous number.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say half, maybe a little less than half, who are alumni. So I think it also serves as a wonderful bridge for alumni to come back, be a part of the department, see old professors, meet the newer professors, and also get training as well.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, we've also offered a discount for alumni too. Mm-hmm. So I think it's good for the university. I think it's good for the students. I think it's good for alumni. We mentioned the internship supervisors and practicum supervisors. I think it's a benefit for them. And again, it goes back to that, how can we make this a win-win-win situation?
Great. How do you determine the topics that you want to be presented through the center?
That can be a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That can be a tremendous challenge. Part of it, you used the word hunch earlier, mm-hmm. Kim, and part of it goes back to somewhat that word. I mean, do you think that this topic would fly? Do you think it would draw interest? And as you can imagine, putting a one-day workshop together takes quite a bit of time,
absolutely.
Particularly with the details and logistics, and we can talk more about that too.
Mm-hmm.
And so it certainly can be disappointing when you put together what you think is a fine workshop, and for whatever reason, again, people don't sign up for it. And again, it could be the topic. It could be the timing of the semester. It could be that, you know, who knows, there's another workshop going on in the area also of interest too. So there can be a lot of factors in there. One of the things that I've tried to do is find out what people want, mm-hmm. both formally and informally. So we have done 2 formal needs assessments since in the last 6 years. The first one was pretty basic because at that point I didn't have a mailing list, so mm-hmm. I wasn't sure who to send them to or how to get them in their hands. And then this last time around, we have done a needs assessment in the last couple of months where we've gotten a tremendous number of students and area professionals to give us feedback on topics that may work. So hopefully that'll be of great help.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, going back to your question, let's go back to the here's what I think might work part without looking at a needs assessment. I've been trying to find topics that are more cutting edge or one where I know, again, I'm no, meaning I guess,
yeah, sure.
that it's a good draw for students and hopefully for area professionals in bringing in a name person.
Okay.
And again, I go back particularly to the last spring workshops. The last two have been reality therapy, mm-hmm. which drew very, very well. And solution-oriented brief therapy, which has drawn very, very well. Mm-hmm. Our first workshop in 2002 on play therapy drew very, very well. And our second workshop on play therapy is coming up next week, mm-hmm. Which is also drawing fairly well as too. So part of it goes back to what do I think or what do we think is a topic that's going to draw students? And the second one is, what does the needs assessment say? And so I'm really eager to see what the findings are from our latest needs assessment in terms of what is it that counselors want? What is it the students want?
Mm-hmm. How did you start to develop your mailing list, or where did you start?
Started from scratch.
Okay.
And that took time. That took a lot of time, Kim. Again, not being familiar with this area, when I initially came on board in 2001, I started anywhere I could possibly find, and that could be phone books. That could be putting out emails saying, hey, if you're interested in this, please let me know. I'd be happy to add you to a mailing list. It could be school districts, certainly in the area. Agencies in the area were certainly added to that. And little by little, sometimes through other people, they're saying, hey, you might want to get on this mailing list, so other people might email me. And little by little, we have grown to a mailing list of over 1,200 people.
Wow.
And that's also not just in the Indiana, Pennsylvania area, but also in the Pittsburgh area, because we do offer workshops down there, and we offer our two programs down there in the Pittsburgh area too.
Uh-huh.
So at this point, we have a sizable mailing list, but we're always looking for more.
Yeah.
And I'm actually quite pleased with that, because the other thing that can come out of this too, for example, doing the needs assessment in terms mm-hmm. of what is it the counselors want, that's also a wonderful way to publicize our center, mm-hmm. Because it actually makes people think, okay, well, maybe I haven't gone to a workshop through the Center for Counselor Training and Services before, but now they're asking me, what is it that I want? So just in the feedback that I know we've gotten so far, there's been quite a bit of interest in saying, yeah, this is interesting. And another thing that can come out of that, too, is co-sponsorship with other entities in the area,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now I'd kind of like to move into talking about logistics. So if a counselor educator out there who's listening, or a counselor who's listening is interested in starting a center at their university or maybe at their community agency, can we talk a little bit about what advice you would have for those people considering taking on something like this?
Mm. Well, we've talked about a couple of things so far. One is there a need for it?
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose it's conceivable that for whatever reasons, maybe there's not a need. I certainly believe there is a need here, and some of our success points that out as well.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a need for it? Two is, who are your audiences? And again, the way I look at our center, we have audiences of students. We have audiences of area professionals. We have audiences certainly of our alumni who could be part of those area professionals. Faculty at other universities, counselor educators at other universities, and faculty in other departments outside of counseling too. So who are your audiences? And then thinking about what kinds of topics might be of interest. So to this point, we've had about 8 or 9 different workshops. We've had ones on, as I mentioned, solution-oriented brief therapy, reality therapy. We had something on keeping schools safe. We had something on working with angry, resistant youth. We had something on play therapy. We're going to have another play therapy workshop next week. We've had something on motivational interviewing. We had something on impact therapy. So what are the different topics or various topics that might work at your university? The other thing to think about is having some kind of system in place, some kind of logistics in place. We have a template that we use that we've developed over the years. Again, learning from our errors and learning from the things that we're doing well in terms of putting a workshop together. So it's identifying the speaker. Is the speaker available on the days that you would like? Mm-hmm. And, you know, in terms of putting the workshop together, what's the best day of the week for people? We've gone with Fridays. We've tried weekends. We've tried Saturdays. Saturdays haven't panned out.
Okay.
Sometimes midweek can also be fine. But identifying your speaker, is the speaker available? Putting a budget together, how much does this presenter charge? Mm-hmm. Also finding out where on campus can you do this? And again, if you're looking at 25 people, that's one thing. If you're looking at 130 people, which we had at one of our workshops, that's an entirely different arrangement. So is some kind of auditorium available on the day that you would like? What goes hand in hand with developing this, too, is parking.
Yeah,
and as you know,
absolutely.
On many university campuses, parking can be an issue. So if you have another 75 people, say, mm-hmm. coming to your campus, where can they park? Can they park for free? Do you need parking tags or something along those lines? So what we've tried to do, Kim, is find a day when the campus is free, meaning a reading day during finals week or during our fall break or whatever it's called, mid-semester break, and finding a day when the campus is open in terms of parking and there is some kind of facility available.
Mm-hmm.
And so fortunately, in planning ahead, and I guess that's another piece of advice I would have for people, planning ahead and finding speakers, we've been able to accommodate everything in terms of the speaker knowing well enough in advance and having the campus open in terms of parking and having the facility available too. So in terms of budgets, you certainly want to look at speaker costs. You want to look at, do you have to rent the facility? Are you going to include lunch in this workshop? Mm-hmm. Certainly hotel, lodging, transportation, picking the speaker up from the airport, or how is that speaker going to get from the airport to your university? You have to also think about the brochure and putting that together too. Mailing that out, again, having the mailing list ready. Are you going to include any kind of continuing ed professional development credit, such as an MBCC or in our state, an Act 48?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to include refreshments during the day of the workshop?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to be co-sponsoring with somebody else? There are a number of different things to think about. And not only in terms of the planning, because all of this is very preliminary, but then how much is it going to cost?
Right. This is what I'm thinking. Yeah.
Right. How much is this going to cost for you in terms of your goals? Is your goal to break even? Is your goal to make money? Is your goal to make a certain amount? So that's another thing, is in terms of what you're going to charge. Are you going to charge students a discount? Are you going to charge alumni a discount? Are you going to offer a discount for internship supervisors and practicum supervisors? So there's certainly a lot in terms of thinking about that. Once they do send in a check, where do they send it to? Mm-hmm. Setting up accounts on campus. And then getting the speaker paid, covering the hotel costs. A lot of little things to mm-hmm. think about here. And then even on the day of the event, you know, making sure AV's there, the audiovisual
yeah.
equipment is there. Double checking to make sure that the reservation is okay. What does the speaker want in terms of things besides audiovisual equipment, chairs, tables? So again, a lot of little things to think about. And I guess the final thing to think about too, to consider, is evaluation.
Mm.
Having an evaluation. What's going to go in the evaluation? What is it that you want people to respond to? And then coming up with some kind of summary report of each workshop, too. And one of the things that I guess I would encourage people, if they're thinking about doing this too, is to make the evaluation form a needs assessment at the same time.
Sure.
By asking people, okay, what did you think about this workshop? And what other kinds of topics would you like to see in the future?
Because I work with you, I know that you've worked very closely with the chair of our department to kind of get this up and running. Could you talk a little bit about the importance of having that support and having that relationship?
Terrific question, Kim. Invaluable. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned earlier, it's our department chair, Dr. Danino, who was the one who came to me and said, okay, we've had a couple of successful workshops. Why don't we develop a center around it? And I didn't even know what a center was at that point. But she was the one who had the vision to say, let's make this more formal and let's make this more of a distinct entity. Again, we're in the counseling department, but we're also one of the centers on campus. So her support has been invaluable. The dean's support has been invaluable too. And also, our dean has been tremendously not only supportive, but also has come with great ideas too. Mm-hmm. So that has been tremendously helpful. And to have a center on our campus, it has to go through a lot of other approval processes. And so, again, with those approval processes comes the support to say, hey, this is a worthwhile idea. But you're absolutely right. We couldn't do what we are doing without the support of the dean and the department chair.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. John, in terms of the center, where do you see the center heading in the future?
I have a couple of ideas along those lines, and I'd love to make more use of video conferencing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the benefit of video conferencing is not having to pay airfare, not having to pay hotel and meals. Having the facilities, however, to do video conferencing can be a challenge. Mm-hmm. We certainly can do that here, not for more than 30 people. At other universities and counselor educators who may be listening to this, they may be able to do video conferencing for greater numbers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So certainly that would be nice. I'd also like to broaden our appeal. Let me try to say that one of the things we've done in the last year, in this academic year, is we've developed an advisory board. Mm-hmm. And that has been a terrific help to bounce ideas and to get their thoughts has been very, very helpful for me. And one of the things that I've learned is to clearly think about who is it that you might want on an advisory board.
Okay.
So what I've tried to do is have a variety of people from different parts, not only the university, but certainly outside the university. Mm-hmm. We're fortunate to have somebody affiliated with one of the larger community counseling agencies nearby. We have a school counselor. We have two alumni. We like to have at least two students on our advisory board. We also have somebody from the financial part of the university. We also have somebody from the graduate research part of the university. So when I talk about a broader appeal, it's thinking about the center in a bigger context than just offering workshops. And out of those advisory board meetings have come some very, very helpful ideas. Mm-hmm. So that's another place where I see where us going in terms of having a broader appeal. And then the other area, Kim, of where this could go is developing grants, or excuse me, I should say obtaining grants. Mm-hmm. Because I could see that having grants would certainly help in a lot of ways, but the other thing to consider along the lines of grants is that we've offered workshops in the Indiana, Pennsylvania area. We've also offered workshops in the Pittsburgh area. And again, for those, particularly counselor educators who might be listening to this, another point of consideration may be, do you want to offer workshops not just where you are or a nearby urban area, but in areas throughout the state, in areas not just in your immediate area, but do you want to take a program and go in a broader area with it? For instance, if you're going to bring in a speaker from, say, 2,000 miles away, that person's coming in and doing a one-day workshop and then is flying back home, do you want to have that person stay with you for a couple of days and offer workshops at your university and then go and offer a couple of more at different parts of the state?
So as I'm hearing you talk, one of the questions that kind of keeps floating through my mind is wondering about the motivations for the center. And I know one of them is wanting to give back to students and wanting to give back to the community, and as a way to kind of give back in a professional development sense. I'm wondering, though, if there's other motivations for the center, and you know, if any of those could be financial for the university, if it could be lucrative for departments, that sort of thing.
And that's a good point, too, Kim, because to this point we've only talked about the motivations in terms of bringing professional development for our various entities. Mm-hmm. The financial piece is certainly something to consider, too. When we do a workshop, I'm only looking to break even. Mm-hmm. That's my bottom line. And also to know that there have been workshops where, you know, we've made a couple hundred dollars, but at least we've made money, you know, versus $1,000. Mm-hmm. And isn't that nice? So in terms of the profit part of this, it hasn't been as important to me, but certainly if you put in a lot of effort, you at least want to break even. Is it nice to make money? Fantastic, yes. And then you think about, okay, well, if you do make money, what do you want to do with that money? And so one of the thoughts is, do we need equipment? Certainly in terms of supplies, there are going to be costs related to the center. And also, might you want to do something even bigger? For example, the last question was, where might the center be headed? Mm-hmm. Well, another thing that could be included there is doing a 1 or 2 day conference where you'd need more money to do that. Another idea might be bringing in another speaker who may be, you know, charging more money. Mm-hmm. So is that possible? So the money part is certainly something to bear in mind, too. Mm-hmm.
John, those are kind of all the questions that I have for you, and I'm wondering if there's anything else that you think it's important for the audience to be aware of when thinking about the center.
There's one thought I have, Kim, and that is I've mentioned that we've had, again, 8 or 9 workshops to this point, and then we've had our professional development days. We're working on the consultation piece in terms of getting that going, and we've had some success with that so far. One of the things that we haven't talked about is what happens when you have those workshops that don't make enough registrants.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And what can you do? And one of the things that I didn't mention before is having some kind of contract with the speaker so that if there aren't enough registrants by, say, 4 or 5 weeks before the actual workshop date, mm-hmm. can you say, gosh, we tried this and it didn't work, so that really nothing is lost other than putting the brochure together and mailing it out?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly something to consider. But one of the things I've done is develop an obstacle chart, a challenge chart. In other words, what happens in terms of, you asked about getting the mailing list going. What can you do there? And that can be a challenge. What can you do in terms of identifying speakers? What can you do in terms of motivating possible registrants? And so one of the things we've done there is had an early registration fee so that they register by this date. It's much less than a quote-unquote late registration fee. It's a way to entice them to register early. And again, at least the way we've done things, registering early is highly beneficial, mm-hmm. because we want to know that we're at least breaking even before we're going to go ahead with a mm-hmm. workshop. If you don't have enough registrants by the deadline, what can you do? Do you want to have a second mailing? One of the things that we've done is we've emailed everybody on our email mailing list as a reminder a week before, saying, hey, this is the deadline. If you're going to register, please do so soon. Finding suitable sites. Again, you may not have availability on campus as far as an auditorium or a large classroom to hold the number of people that you want to. So what else is possible? We've worked with a community college down in the Pittsburgh area. They've been wonderful to work with, and the performance auditorium seats, I think, 250 people. So where do you want to have it? Do you want to have it at a hotel? And again, think budget and how much more that can cost. Logistical help. Graduate assistants have been invaluable in terms of allowing this to happen, because inevitably there will be phone calls and there will be emails. Did you get my registration? Or, you know, did you get the check that was sent by the school district? So having that can be really, really helpful. And then how else do you want to promote your offerings other than a flyer? Mm-hmm. So we have a website. We want to make our presence known to other places in the institution and outside of the institution. Press releases, making sure that the university publications office or communications office or public relations office gets a press release. Contacting local mental health organizations and school counseling organizations. Last fall, as you know, we did a program for the Pittsburgh area, Allegheny County mm-hmm. School Counselors Association, a very, very good crowd there. And we had workshops and presentations. And again, that was done in conjunction with the university as a whole. But again, that's a wonderful way to make our center known too. And also getting the word out through student work sites, because, you know, at any counselor ed program, the students are working. Mm-hmm. And so getting the word out through them to say, hey, these workshops are here. They're in the area. Hopefully a very, very good workshop, a very, very good presenter. And that's another way to get the work out. Mm-hmm. So there will be obstacles. And one of the things that I've learned is that what I think is a fantastic mm-hmm. workshop may not be a fantastic mm-hmm. workshop. It could be the timing of the semester, but not to get discouraged and certainly not to give up. And for anybody listening in terms of thinking about this, two things. Okay. One is feel free to contact me. I'd be more than happy to help. And two is, to my knowledge, there isn't a similar center at other counseling departments. Mm-hmm. And if there is another center or are other centers, I'd certainly like to hear from them in terms of how they do things as well. Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if it might be helpful for our audience to have the web address to check out the center site.
If you go to www.iup.edu/CE, that's the site for the department here mm-hmm. at Indiana University, Pennsylvania. In the upper left-hand corner, you will see the link to Center for Counselor Training and Services. In terms of what we've offered, things coming up, a little bit about the center, the advisory board. And yes, if people have feedback about that, I'd certainly be eager to hear that too.
And I'm sure your contact information is there.
Yes.
People have questions.
It certainly is.
Great. Anything else you can think of, John, that we need to be aware of?
I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this, Kim. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
You've just heard an interview of Dr. John McCarthy regarding the Center for Counselor Training and Services.
Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselorAudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor AudioSource, or by calling 330-871-4242. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor AudioSource broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor AudioSource is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor AudioSource is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.